Thank you. Hi, I'm Johan and I'm an addict. Hello, everyone. I can see that there's some people I know that are not here with the picture, but in the spirit and audio. I presume that's what it looks like. So my sobriety date is 23rd of November, 1996. So it's 24 years and change. I have about, I would say maybe 15 of those years in good, healthy recovery, meaning that 9 years, oh, my sober time has not been like a walk in the park. And I want to mention this because people tend to think that long time equals good sobriety, which is not my experience. And it's not even my understanding of most people that have long time. They've all struggled from time to time. Today, I'm going to talk a bit about hope, faith, and courage, as that is the foundation of our fellowship, or the pillars we built our fellowship on. And the reason for that is that I want to really put a strong word in for people that has less than 9 years of sobriety now, meaning got sober after the first discovery of Corona and the Corona hitting the European continent and also the States, and the lockdown started. I would say getting sober in these times it's a fucking miracle. I'm not sure that I ever tried to be sober during these circumstances, or tried to live like a life of like isolating myself and being a responsible adult. That was not my behavior when I was an addict, and I believe that many people are like that. And if you got in and got sober during these like really troubling time, hats off to you guys. It's yeah, it's nothing short of a miracle. I want to start by saying that, yes, I am an addict. I had some extreme love for mind-altering substances. It started with alcohol when I was like 10, 11, then off to weed and hash like age 13. And then from 15, 16, I was almost a regular daily user of amphetamines, cocaine, acid, ecstasy, alcohol, of course. And the only thing that actually could take me off the mind-altering substances for a little short while is if I were connected to some sort of female that I could have some fun with instead. So I really did not have much of a choice. I'm like I don't have a mind of my own when I'm using. It's just like go on autopilot from beginning to end. Started really early, as I said before. I started working in restaurants when I was 13. I also moved from my parents' home when I was 13. To my first own small flat it's a small city outside of Stockholm that's up north. And my father had a big house and I got one apartment in that house. And I tried to raise myself, giving myself some sort of values. And that was not only hard, it was... it's a really crappy idea to give yourself values at the age of 13. So that kind of like set the foundation of my using days, that I kind of like, I minded my own business is what I thought. It ended my using days, and let's skip back just a little bit and talk about this, because I do think it's important to know that I belong in these rooms, because I mean there's so many people I haven't met, but I mean, I started using heavily when I was young, but it didn't get out of control, where I knew I didn't know how to stop until my, I don't know, early 20s or something. So I went on like the first using years thinking that I had a chance to let that shit go if I needed to. But I did, however, never take the chance to let it go. I'm not even sure if I had any sober days the first 10 years from 15 to 25. Maybe I had a few, but not many. And I moved around a lot when I was young. I worked in the in UK, I worked in Germany, I worked in Spain, I worked in different places around Sweden, and I also worked in the States. And in the beginning, I was working as a bartender or as a nightclub manager and making festivals and stuff like that. So I was kind of like doing parties for everyone else. And I still do, actually, even though I'm sober since a long time ago. I don't arrange the parties, but I build the places that they're at. And somewhere along this way, I couldn't afford to support my using habit on the salary or the tips I got as a bartender. From my profession, I started to sell instead. And that's a pretty bad dope dealer. I never could pay back the money I owed. And I could never, I always had to lend the next party that I'm supposed to sell. Party, you don't say that. The next stash you're about to sell, I always needed to borrow that. And when I came back with the money, it always came up a bit short. So I needed to borrow something more and more and more. And this went on and on. And in the end, made me go repaying my debt by moving drugs around the American continent from the south to the north for some people that I owed money. So it's kind of like a job. I would maybe call it then. Now I would just would say that it was just a way for me to repay my debt. And it ended there in November of 1996. I woke up after maybe a 5-week bender, I would think. That's the last memory I have before waking up dead. I was out of dope, out of money, no clothes. I woke up in some strange apartment, or maybe it was like a motel room or hotel room. I don't really remember. Got outside and call up my father and ask him to pay me a ticket back home. And that was the first time I really admitted that to someone else, that I needed to sort out my shit by someone outside of my own life. So call up my father and ask him to take me home to Sweden. And he came up with a bright idea that we were supposed to start a business together. So we did. And then I stole all his money from that business and used it on drugs and whatever you could get your hands on. And then it ended on the 23rd of November, me being committed to rehab in the north of Sweden. And I've been sober since. Not because I understood what the program was about, not because I understood that it was such a fucking awesome idea to be sober. Two basic ideas kept me sober in the beginning. First, I was afraid of my family, that they would kind of like look down on me if I couldn't manage to be sober. That was one, out of fear. And the other one was out of spite, because all my friends said I would never be able to be sober for more than a couple of weeks. And I just wanted to prove them wrong. So I did. And even though it might be the totally wrong method or even motive for anyone that comes into to early sobriety, I just want to mention that I didn't get sober for anyone. I got sober for just because I thought that it would be a nice change of tempo in my life for a few weeks or a few months before I get on it again. It was just pure luck that I stayed sober, because a couple of months into rehab, someone started talking, and for the first time in my life, I actually heard what someone else was saying. They were talking about seeing colors. They were talking about how they felt. They were talking about having a car to sleep in instead of sleeping outside. They were talking about, they were all heavy IV users and I wasn't. And I'm not looking down on IV users, but I do get the understanding that it's really hard to stop when you're on the needle, because it's one more thing to kick. It's not just the substance. It's also the periphalia and all the things surrounding that. And what happened was that all these old guys, I mean, there must have been at least like 35, 40 years old. I was like 25, and the disco drug addict, as they called me. For the first time in my life, I heard someone saying something that felt for me. The first time in my life, I heard someone talk about my feelings. I felt the same way they did. Maybe we had some differences when it came to life. I thought I was a big hotshot with all these festivals and nightclubs and shit. And I thought they were, this is my early days, so I'm kind of excused now. They lost a lot more. They didn't have any place to live. They didn't have any, I don't know, money, clothes, whatever. And I felt that we were not the same. But after those few months, when I came into the program or to rehab, and finally started to listen to what people talked about, I understood that I felt the same way. And that is the first time in my life I didn't feel alone. The first time ever that I didn't feel alone. And I was 25 at the time, and it would be like early 1997 or something like that. And that high that gave me, that sense of belonging, made me understand that there's something here that might be worthwhile. And I started to listen more, involving myself in the program and talking to people in the treatment center and stuff like that. And I came out on the other side 6 months after rehab, knowing that I wanted to be sober. I still don't have a reason. I didn't understand how. I saw the steps on the wall. Maybe they talked about it and I missed it. But in the 90s, that was not a big thing here in Sweden, like working with the steps. We only had two fellowships back then. We had AA and NA, both tremendous fellowships. And I can surely say that I owe them my life. And coming into the first meetings when I moved back to Stockholm, I didn't understand anything what people talked about. But I remember that there was this one really big meeting, like 150, 200 people every meeting. That was every Tuesday night. And the only one who were allowed to speak were the people that took a medallion of annual sobriety. So on my first year, I went there and I took my medallion, and people shared and applaud and made me come up and say something. And I remember thinking that I said some really profound truths to everybody. And afterwards, my first sponsor came up to me and he asked, or he actually told me, I think you need some help. So I'm not really sure what I told him. I'm just sure that it didn't make sense program-wise. And he helped me through the steps the first time. And that's the first time I really understood that not only am I able to stay sober, it's attractive to be sober, and it's fun to be sober, and it might be a total new way of life for me. As everyone, I had my ups and downs in the fellowship and moving in from active addiction, when you're kind of like stressing your mind out to the max every day, you're kind of like hammering it with like debt you owe, people to talk to, people you're afraid of, places not to visit, places you need to go to, money you need to pay back, money someone else owes you, or all that like calculating you have inside your head. It made me really crazy during my using years. And coming into sobriety in a couple of years in, I understood that to be able to heal that mayhem in my brain, I needed to find some other way of handling that stress, because it didn't go away by itself. Working the steps made me realize how I wanted to live my life, but I needed something more. And I was introduced to meditation. And I can put it like this. First of all, understanding that I need to be sober is the base foundation of everything in my sobriety. The next one is the steps, working the steps, making sure that you're kind of like walked all the way through it. And the third reason why I'm still sober and feel good today is through meditation. I would never have taken away all that chatter inside my brain without meditation. It's doubtful that I would stay sober without meditation. Maybe only the steps would have worked, but I would not change my life today with any sort of life I would be able to have without meditation, because meditation is, it's not only about sobriety today, it's about everything else too. I meditate a lot. I attend workshops on meditation. I hold workshops on meditation. I do retreats, I go to retreats, and if I were to say something to anyone that doesn't have a solid practice of meditation, but have a solid practice of sobriety, they're sober, they feel good and stuff like that, I would strongly suggest that spend some time with people that meditate a lot. And try to understand what it's all about. And if you meditate a lot and believe it's beneficial for you, just please make people understand that it's beneficial for you, because I try to emphasize this to my sponsees. I try to tell my sponsor that this is a big part of my life. I try to tell, I mean, everybody that I meet that, I mean, meditation is the foundation of my life, even though sobriety is like for staying alive. Understanding that I need to be sober is staying alive, but meditation is so much more for me. And I just want to end that saying that even though I came into, or I was presented the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous through other fellowships, I would strongly, I'm not even sure how to say this correctly, but I would say that it wasn't until I was presented the fellowship of Cocaine Anonymous that I felt that I had a solution to every problem I would ever encounter wherever I am in the world. I get to go to Latin America, to the States, to Asia, to wherever. I can meet people almost everywhere having the same story as I do. People who want me to be healthy and successful, that has my best interest at heart. I don't know, people that can take me out of a pinch as long as I try to keep close to the fellowship. Yeah, that and service. And to circle back to the thing I said first, you know, staying sober is one thing. Being happy is another. And being satisfied with your life is the other part that you, I mean, you want to be satisfied, you want to be happy, you want to feel, you don't just want to be sober, you need something more to be able to prolong that experience you have early in sobriety. So meditation, service, fellowship, I think is the most important parts we have. There is so much service to do. There's so many committees that need help. There's everything from PI to hospitals and institutions. There you can do service in the World Fellowship in their committees. You can do the service in local level or district level or area level. Just, I would say service, meditation, and the program of Cocaine Anonymous is the foundation of my life today. I would not have the things I have without it. And with that, I have a little more to say, so I think I'll pass. Thank you. Thank you.